the shore where the mountains meet the sea, in a clapboard shack by a broken down tree. There's a light in the window, two salty gals inside. I'm not sure if they're witches, but you know that's implied. Got the storytelling, ego swelling, pillow talking, moonlight walking sea hags.
Welcome to the Sea Hags Podcast. My name is Chris Jeppa.
And I'm Katie Nordgren.
And today we are joined by a wonderful musician and friend of mine, Orit Shimoni.
Hello, fellow hags.
Today is a blustery as fuck kind of day. It's like the ocean is raining down from the sky and it's raining sideways. It's gray, it's wet.
It's gorgeous.
We love it.
I love it. We're holed up in the shack drinking our kombucha because it's Vancouver.
Namaste.
Namaste. My soul recognizes your soul.
Oh, of course.
Aw, that's so sweet.
That's what namaste means.
Oh, that's very nice.
Except for in the hilarious satirical article I read where it was like, I think namaste means go fuck yourself. The people who say it seem
like
to be saying
the Vancouver version of bless your heart.
Yes. Oh, bless your heart.
Oh, namaste. Just the most passive aggressive.
It is a little passive aggressive.
Just a little. Just a touch.
Do we want to just kind of check in?
Let's check it in.
How's your week been, Katie?
Oh, God. Last few episodes, I've reported a real uptick in my old self-image and feeling real good about myself, and this is the week it fell down. I'm dealing with some shame today. I overdid it on Friday, really badly. I'm a moderate drinker or consumer of any number of things. I don't like to get too shitty. But in this case, I was hanging out with a new friend and was nervous and just kind of, we'll go drink for drink with someone, and that's not a good plan. Then I lost about an hour and a half of the whole evening. It's this deleted scene, and I don't know what happened, and I'm very embarrassed about it. And I'm just like, I keep reliving what it could have been, what I might have done, like... And my wife has been filling in little snippets because I came home and she had to take care of me. I insisted that she make me chicken nuggets.
Wow.
And then I tried to fall asleep and she had to feed them to me in bed. She had to change my clothes into pajamas. And it was I feel really comforted that she did that, but I'm also really embarrassed that she had to. But you know what? We all get a few freebies, and I'm going to say that that was mine.
Yeah, you were talking in your last episode, you know, tending to her after she broke her elbows and stuff like that. So
yeah.
It's all part of
very
caretaking and
loving. It's hard for me to accept support from other people, and that's something I know about myself, and I don't love it. But I also I don't like feeling like I need other people to take care of me, but we all do, so it's okay.
And
lesson number one from the road.
So yes, Orit is a touring musician and has a lot of wisdom to share today, and we're going to get into...
It's experience. It may or may not be wise experience.
Well, you know, everything is evidence. Everything's wisdom in its own way, and sometimes learning what not to do is way more valuable.
That's very true.
So other things that are of interest, I would say that we really hit a milestone, you and me, Miss Chris, in the last little while, because we've been working on this podcast for 4 months. We've been friends for a really long time, but
after all the... We normally don't spend a lot of time in person together.
But now after, you know, doing this weekly for 4 months, even though we're just about to release our first episodes, our menstrual cycle synced up for the first time to the day.
Oh, man.
Which is so fucking stupid.
It's a little bit of a cliche, but it's sweet.
It totally happens.
Yeah, the Sea Hags Shack is a sometimes menstrual hut, and that's just that's what you gotta do.
I just want a high five for being in sync with the two of you.
Yeah.
So that's pretty crazy.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Periods! Yay!
I was lamenting just this week of just feeling really shitty and, you know, emotional and bloaty and in pain and having to deal with a lot of things. You know, you wake up in the morning and you have to tend to yourself, and then you still have to go to work. Even after dealing with a lot of grossness.
It's not fair.
It's not fair. And so I wrote, you know, on Twitter, it's just like, bring back the menstrual hut. And like so many people agreed with me. It's like, it would be nice to just be able to get a little week's vacation because my threshold for bullshit is just lowered so much.
Nowhere.
So I was like really cranky at work. Managed to sort of make myself feel better by like going out with some folks and like, with the use of a curling iron and some lipstick, just doll up and trick my bad mood by being real cute.
Put a good face on a shitty mood.
Yeah, it worked, sort of, because, you know, I'm adorable. Better than nothing. So
you are.
That's great.
So
it works well.
I agree with that. Yeah,
but
for sure.
Yeah, so my coworker was talking a lot about how everything this week was in Pisces. All the planets were in Pisces, which is your sign, Katie.
Sorry.
But, you know, emotional high tides and everything being sort of slippery and elusive like a fish. So, like, anything that we think is solid or, like, real is, like, really not, and it's kind of an illusion, so just feel okay to just let it go, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I had a really interesting job interview, and I'm kind of like, okay, I'm not going to put too much pressure on that. Maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. And, like, this really bad feeling that I'm having is also going to pass.
Yes.
You know, and so don't make any decisions this week. Just feel the feelings and let them
ride
go
it
and
out.
Wash over you like the river.
Lesson number two from the road. It's true.
Just to not get too...
You can't. Like, you're literally moving from place to place. So the concept of letting things go, you're forced into that because you, like, fall in love with everybody you meet and then have to let it go the next day.
Wow.
And be ready for the next one. So for sure, like, the good and the bad, you're just like... I am a fish on the road.
Flapping.
Flap. Gasping
like,
for air.
Put me back in the water. Time.
Yeah, kind of. Yes, there is a lot of gasping for air.
Where did I get this bicycle? I do not need that.
Letting go. Letting go.
So, yeah.
Theme.
So, that was just like having a body was awful this week. And
having a body
you know,
awful.
It is. Like, you were just saying, like, or he was saying, you know, it's I'm going to so be shifting around as, like, my tailbone's fucked and I injured my feet and,
yeah.
Like...
Yeah, it's been more than a week, you guys.
We're all being brutalized by our flesh prisons this week.
And, like, gravity, what a bastard gravity
what a
can be.
Shitbag gravity is.
How was your week, Ori? You just rolled into Vancouver?
Yes.
Where'd you come from?
Calgary.
Ah.
My week was great, and I don't say that very often. It usually is pretty great, but I usually feel complainy. I was wrapping up my time in Calgary. I had a place to myself for a couple of weeks, which is a huge luxury for me, and I was able to catch up on a lot of booking work, which is a huge part of what I have to do, but it's the hardest part to tend to while I'm gigging a lot and socializing with the people I'm staying with and working on recordings and writing, and it's like, oh shit, but I haven't booked shows. So I caught up. I caught up on a lot, and I caught up with a very renewed sense of motivation that I really needed because I was really burnt out, and there were a few things that the universe went, dose, 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 here, 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 you need this, this, this. And I got all of it and just went, I've been rebooted.
That's wonderful. Because I can imagine, just being on the road, playing shows every night, you know, or traveling in between them all the time, and it just would drain your energy. And then having to do all the admin stuff.
It's ridiculous.
It's such a pain in the ass as well. But you need to keep doing it to keep doing it.
And like also, if I don't do it, I have no income. So it's...
Yikes, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, if I can take a break, but that means that I will have zero coming in.
Yeah.
So I have to not let it slide.
Hustle.
Yeah.
I just gotta keep hustling.
Yeah. I think I hit a paradigm shift about the hustle in the last week.
Yeah?
After reading a novel about a Russian revolutionary,
That's why your phone keeps autocorrecting.
To Trotsky, I know. It's
totally to Trotsky.
That's way before I read the novel, but it's all coming together now. The signals from my paranoid universe. It's telling me something.
You have to go kill Putin.
Don't say that on the air.
Oh, no. He will do something about it.
Okay, yeah, probably. We're being bugged right now.
Oh, shit. I think we're being recorded.
That's the best.
But what was your paradigm shift, sort of?
It's not a new thing for me, but it's something that I need constant reminding of, is that there are reasons that I'm doing what I'm doing beyond myself. And I have to constantly... One of the things that brings me down, like, in a huge way, is feeling like it's about the success or failure of my ego, and then having to remember that the songs are for other people and songs help people, and they actually actively help people. So it's not about me wanting attention for what I do. It's about me providing a service for people. That's a very business way of saying that, but I mean I've music is medicine. Mm. It's medicine for myself, but it's also medicine for other people. Mm-hmm. And there were a few conversations, like really important, pivotal conversations in the last few weeks for me that reminded me of that.
Nice.
And then reading this, I've been very concerned about not being an activist enough in these very, very troubled times. Mm-hmm. And like having really struggling guilt over that, like, what am I doing? Like, there's like serious wars, and there are I am not involved enough. And every time I express concern about that, my friends are like, you are an activist, what are you talking about? You're this nomadic like songster singing like awareness to people, and that's activism. Like, no, yeah, but no, because, you know, I'm not like risking anything. Like, there you are, you're totally risking things all the time, like you're a total fucking activist. Okay. And then reading this book
about the Russian revolutionary.
She wasn't really. It was written incredibly brilliantly, because she just got swept up in the revolution, and the different characters embodied different sentiments regarding being a revolutionary and the ambiguity about it. Mm. And I was kind of flabbergasted when I met the first characters in the novel who were speaking this. I mean, and in those days, it was really like, ideology was ideology. It was before postmodernism. So there was no fragmentation. If you believed in something, that was pervasive, and Marxism was Marxism. There was a character whose mother committed suicide when she was young, and when she confided that to the group of revolutionaries, like, she didn't kill herself, the class systems killed her. And it was, I'm reading
that.
It's
not wrong.
It's not wrong, but it's also ridiculous, even though it's not wrong. And mm-hmm. to see everything from, I was like, how could anybody have been so single-minded, but then other characters reveal the ambiguity. Mm. It just really, really spoke to me, and then kind of juiced me, and I was like, no, you get out there, and you do this, and do this in a way that's maybe a little more overt and obvious, that you're not just performing. So I've started doing workshops now, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and more community things.
Right
that, so I'm going to do my shows, but I'm offering workshops before the shows, and then I feel like,
well, that's a way to put it more out into the world.
Yeah, well, because people don't have to make the leap. They'll mm-hmm. enjoy the music if they enjoy the music, but I can actually make them more interactively part of and make it more explicit that this is what rhythm does to communities, this is what melody does to communities, this is what expressing yourself creatively does for communities. Let's do a workshop together where we all do that together.
Fucking A.
And then let's
fucking A.
And then let's sit back and enjoy my show, you know?
Hello.
Something like that.
Yeah, now you've done some work, sit back and relax, and I'll entertain you with cheeky, fun, and sad and emotional and beautiful songs.
Yeah, but kind of showing the culmination of years of mm-hmm. thinking that way, but just here's my example of my creativity. Mm-hmm. Now go do yours.
As like, I've played cello and accompanied so many different people, and you're one of the main songwriters, Orit, that like really, even without explicitly saying that, really communicates that kind of message. Aww. And it's always such a pleasure to play with you, because you get the most comments after shows of people being like, I was so touched by that.
Aww.
It was really beautiful.
Aww.
Like, of all the different shows that I've played, maybe some people will get one, but you consistently get like a flood of people just being like, that was really important. Thank you so much.
Oh my God.
So that's really lovely.
Oh, thank you.
That's so nice.
There's actually, and this is why I always talk about, the universe just seems to know what I need at all times, because the more I doubt it, the more explicit feedback I get mm-hmm. about that. In the last few months, I've gotten emails after shows saying, please keep doing this. You're articulating things for us. We need to hear what you're like. Please keep doing this. And I'm like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. They don't think I'm just like a wanker, like wanting to sing my songs to be like, really, it's crazy.
We're all a little bit wankers, but.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's obviously, like, my ego enjoys performing, mm-hmm. for sure. And
why would you do it if you didn't? Like, it would just be activism. Like, this is torture. I hate every second of this, but I have to do it.
It is torture sometimes, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've done a whole slew of shows that I was way too exhausted to be doing.
It's just, there's none of that joy of performativity.
Not a lot of joy.
It's like obligational.
There is good adrenaline rush at the end of the show, but the whole day leading up to it, you're just like,
You're still doing the work. It's just not as like personally rewarding at the moment, I guess. Like
leading up to, and then the first like song or half set can be torture when you're really tired and not feeling well, and then anxiety.
Was that when you came back to Vancouver and we kind of had to just call it
a little while? That was the only time that that's ever happened to me, and it set a panic fear for the next few months of mm-hmm. performing.
Wow.
It was really a dramatic.
Yeah, you were so ill with the flu, and we were playing at Café du Soleil, and Or he was just like, you know, I have to stop.
And I thought I was going to faint on stage. And I was like, I really don't want to faint in front of all these nice people. And I called it. And it was the most terrifying.
Because you've got such this, like, work ethic on the road right. that you were just like, I'm not going to cancel any show
I've played way sicker than that, too. Mm-hmm. So I was surprised by my own. And it was my body literally was like, hey, you, like... You're not listening.
You're not just your brain, lady.
You need to listen. And I'm going to convince you that you're fainting. Mm. I felt like I wasn't getting any oxygen between breaths.
Shit. Oh, God, jerk body.
Well, but, I mean, so hard to have.
But thank you for looking after you, I guess, way, too. Oh, man.
But it took me a long time to recover from that. Yeah,
They're annoying. Persnickety little things.
They are.
Now, today is the first
day,
I think.
They're also really good things for, like, telling you things.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to listen.
It's a good little message system, but listening to them is difficult.
Yeah.
But, so today is the first day that I think I've properly met you, Ari.
Yes.
Like, I don't know if I've heard tell of you in the taverns and
streets. I'm a legend in this tavern.
Absolutely. But I know that you and Chris have known each other for a really long time, and you apparently have a pretty good tell.
Yeah.
Meeting.
So I think it's been about 4 years.
Something
is that what
like
we
that,
thought?
Yeah.
4 or 5. And so we met at the Railway Club in sort of a random thing. I was there with my friend Hillary, who sings the theme song.
Hi, Hillary. We love you.
Yay, we love you.
We do love Hillary.
And we were out seeing a supper show at the Railway Club, and it was my friends Cam and Jesse who did one the first Wednesday of the month.
Oh, yeah.
They're silly gentlemen. They no longer do that, and the Railway Club has changed a lot. But at that time, it was sort of like my clubhouse where I felt very full of, like, awesome community people. And so it's like, oh, I'll just go to this regular thing. And they always would invite people to come and play. And I would get up and sing backing vocals with them. And Orit was there because she was going to be playing a show later in the night. So she was just there early, get some food, chill out.
Sound check.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the guys that were running the supper show said, hey, why don't you come up and play a song?
Yeah. And I did. I was like, oh, that's really nice. Yeah, yeah, okay. And it was like... You know, 4 years ago was different for me. Like, I was already halfway into my touring life, but I was, like, you get a lot more confident as you go. So I can remember kind of faking my confidence a little bit that I was like, okay, I'm on, and I gotta think fast and pick a song that's gonna work with what they're doing, because a lot
it's kind of a silly, raunchy vibe, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm, like, not known for my silly, raunchy songs, but I had one.
Oh, perfect.
I had one. Yeah, and so that's the one I played.
And she invited Hillary and I to come up on stage and sing backing vocals, so we did, and that was really delightful.
Wonderful.
And then, she was playing this, like, sassy song, and the two guys were, like, slow dancing and grabbing each other's butts and stuff like that behind her. And
so, I didn't know that. I just know everybody was laughing. I'm like, okay, someone's going to mind me.
So,
I hope they're not making fun of me.
But, I don't know, it was a delightful thing, and then you said, you know, stay for my set, and...
Yeah.
Just wound up basically like, hey, I'm a musician that comes into town every once in a while, so then next time I'm in town, can we play music together? And it's just become a tradition that sort of in the spring, it seems like, usually.
Yeah,
or
it shifts a little bit from year to year, but I'm usually here once a year.
You're like a bird.
I used to be called Little Birdie.
Oh, that's why. There we go. That just clicked in. I remember
that.
I remember seeing posters and things.
Yeah. So, like, we've done shows every time you come in. Either we've planned, like, a house concert at my place or at our friend Svi's place, which is a beautiful place to play music.
We did a couple more Railway Club shows. Mm-hmm. We did Café du Soleil a couple of times.
Yeah, so we generally try to gig as much. And we just played a show last night at Skinny Fat Jack's, which is the little space spot. Is the words that I was trying
splot.
To splot.
Space spot.
That little splot behind Slickety Jim's Chat and Chew.
Oh, we just love quirky names here at Slickety Jim's.
Yeah, it's a really lovely space, though.
It's an incredible space.
It was super tiny.
I heard that.
We were told, you know, the capacity of this is only, like, 25 people because of fire code. And it was the weird sensation where it's like, normally you're just like, oh, I hope enough people come. And this time we were just like, I hope
too many people don't come.
Yeah, so that no one has to be turned away.
It was the weirdest feeling of my life. To be worried about both outcomes at the same time. Like, not enough people, too many people.
Want exactly the right amount of people to show up here.
I need exactly 25 people to show up. Or people to show up early, leave, and new. And that's exactly, it couldn't have happened more perfectly.
That's wonderful.
There were bums in all the seats, and then a few left, and a few more came. It was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
And yeah, it was just a beautiful, beautiful show to play. We wound up, just jamming together for a lot. So
just jamming it out.
It's a delight.
Right on.
But so that's kind of our origin story. We just keep doing stuff every time, and I want it to continue
very much.
And as, like, you know, you're on the road and traveling around, you must have a lot of little hot spots all over the world where you've got people that you meet up with.
That's the best part about being a solo act. Because everyone's like, oh, you must be, you're all into... No, because I'm solo. That was a whole series of sentences.
Yeah, I didn't really catch that, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The fact that I'm solo allows me to play with a whole bunch of different musicians, because if I was touring with a band, I'd be locked into that band, and there wouldn't be that much spontaneous music making with other musicians.
And then also you don't get as, like, tired and pissed off at the band that you're touring with.
There's a million reasons I'm really grateful I don't tour with the band. And there's a couple I'm sad about, too. Yeah. But mostly, there's no way in hell I would have lasted this long with a band.
Yeah.
Even just looking for places to stay on the road would have been impossible.
It's a lot easier to find a place for one person than it is for five.
Yeah, yes. Definitely. Do you mind giving us a little... So I know you've done a lot of interviews, so if you're curious about other aspects of Orit's music and personality and other work, she's featured on CBC a lot. I'm sure there's lots of press to Google. We'll throw up some links on the thing as well to your website, and people can listen to your music and all of that. But just we wanted to tap into a little more of, like, the personal stuff in our relationship and things like that, but just how did you get started being a touring musician? So... It's quite a leap to take to suddenly just be like, you know what, I'm going to not have an address. I am just going to tour around the world constantly and just play music everywhere.
Yeah, it sounds so cool, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I was a musician all along. Mm-hmm. I was playing shows from high school age. But I didn't think I was going to be a musician. I just kind of was a musician without realizing I was one. And I was trying to build a regular life. I became a school teacher. I assumed at some point I'd get married and, you know, did my little academic life setting up stuff and did music all along. And then... there's a lot more to that. There'll be like 17 memoirs when I'm done. Just keep, you know, stay tuned. But when I was living in Montreal in the 2000s, I formed my first band, and about three shows in, someone came to our show, and this will forever piss me off. This happened all the time. My show, my songs, I had a side guy. People would always go and talk to the side guy about stuff. I'm like, why?
I just rolled my eyes. Nobody saw that.
Yeah.
It was a really,
they
really deep eye roll.
They felt it through the airwaves, yeah.
That was my men are exhausting eye roll.
Men are so exhausting.
Oh, God.
Look, yes, but it's true.
It's true.
yeah. So we love you, but, you know.
Yeah.
So my side guy came up to me and he's like, go talk to that guy. His name is Mark. He wants to produce an album for us. And I'm like, oh, that's the guy I was chatting with before. And he didn't know I was the one who was going to sing. And I didn't know he was there to hear us because he heard good things about us and wants to produce us. Cool. And an album was made, amazing production work. Mark Goodwin is his name. Hire him. record came out. I had absolutely no idea what releasing a record meant. Like, I didn't speak that language yet because I was just this, I just wrote songs and went and played them. I didn't tell people when I had shows. Like, I didn't understand
that any of the business side.
Any of it. I was like, it was like a form of autism, and I say that in the best way possible because it was totally pure. I'm like, oh, you're supposed to invite people. Like, I'm like, or won't there be like random people there at the bar and they'll be the ones who hear you? Like, I thought it was the weirdest thing in the world to ask your friends to come. I still have a hard time with that. the one thing I was forced to do was just send it to CBC when it was done, and that record, the leader, the art music director of CBC loved that album a lot, and just kind of put the word out in the different programmers in CBC to pump it up. And then I was like, okay, so it's not all in my head. I don't suck, apparently.
That's nice, you know. Nice. Yeah. You wanna try to exist without validation, but then you also need it because you need to know, you know, mm-hmm. I can keep continuing. And
there was a cluelessness to me that, I mean, in retrospect is hilarious. It aggravated the hell out of the guys working with me because they're like, come on, man, like, we just, like, helped you out, like, because we believed your record could do really well and you're not doing anything with it. I'm like, oh. I don't know what you're supposed to do with it. Nobody's telling me what to do. Why won't somebody just tell me what to do?
It's like you're riding a tricycle one day and then they try to get you to drive an 18-wheeler without explaining
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it was pretty much how I felt. So there were little piecemeal things where, okay, we went to play, like, Canadian Music Week and we got accepted into little things and I filled out my first little grant application to go do that. And I basically got a glimpse of... I remember going like, holy shit, this grant application is more work than my master's thesis. Like, holy this crap. Is an insane amount of work and follow-up and organization. And I was teaching at the same time and finishing my master's at the same time and writing my first book at the same time and basically Jesus. Never slept. So I got a glimpse of how much work is entailed in doing music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then thought, oh man, I'll never know what I can do with this unless I give it my full-time attention.
Yeah.
My whole life I've been jealous of people who have a single focus because I've always been trying to live like 40 lives at the same
time.
Have
like your fingers in 20 yeah. different pies.
Many, many
that's
delicious
what I'm,
pies.
That's what I'm doing right now. Like it feels fragmented but all sort of leading to the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just such an interesting concept to be like, okay, let's... All this other stuff that I'm using maybe is, like, a solid foundation
it
to,
certainly
like,
is,
pay
yeah.
my bills and get that. Mm-hmm. Like, I really hold on to that kind of stuff.
I think it's also thematically foundational. Mm-hmm. Like, it feeds your art, too. Yeah. So when people tell me, like, well, I'm not an artist like you because I still have a job, I'm like, no, your job feeds your art. Like,
yeah.
it's all one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. I just, when I finished high school, I was like, I want to take a year off and do music. And my mom and dad were like, yeah, you can. Sure. We really recommend you do something else. Take a year off if you want to, but or you know, but you should have a backup plan because mm-hmm. like it's good to have a backup plan.
Yeah. That's always very drilled into me, like have something to fall back on yeah. that's practical, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I would mm-hmm. recommend that now, like even yeah. like yeah, music's great, but like
I've never not worked a wage job since I've been like 16 years old. I've
yeah.
always had a job at the same time. And that's not like, ooh, I'm amazing. I've always had this job. It's like, mm-hmm. no, I have terror feelings when I think about not having a steady paycheck.
Yeah, and when I did finally quit my job to do music full time, there was a wave of terror feelings.
I bet.
For sure.
I frickin' bet.
Yeah, it was, yeah, absolutely terrifying. But I want to add, since we're sea hags, that not having a steady income or that, like, a little financial independence when you're a woman is supremely important.
Yeah.
And I learned that watching a documentary in school when I was 12. And I remember going, oh, my God, I'm never going to financially be dependent on a man, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that colored me like that, and I'm like, no, like, if you get knocked up you have to be able to take care of the kid by yourself. That was like this thing in my head from
oh, wow.
the time
oh,
I was really
God.
young. It's weird, but yeah, so yeah, good to have a backup plan. But this mythical year off lingered in my brain mm. for the entire decade that I waited to do that, and so I was like, I'm gonna take a year off now. And I did, and within 2 months or so, and I was completely freaked out, but it was only a year off, so it wasn't a big deal. And then within about 2 months, I was like, a year is not enough. Like, are you insane? Like, you need 5 years.
Wow.
You're not going to get a glimpse of anything. You're going to, like, move 2 inches forward and then, like, stop it all again when you go back to work. Like, no, you need more than a year. I'm giving a really long answer, I realize.
That's totally
I do that.
We've got unlimited digital data.
Yeah. I'm trying to, because I'm remembering it myself. Like, how did this happen? in that year off, I ended up moving to Berlin after flailing around through Canada and finding, like, I wanted one show in Alberta, one show in BC. Like, I had little goals for myself to, okay, you know, you took a year off, you have to do one show in each province and one or two shows in Europe, and then you'll have done your year off. Ended up
your semester abroad.
Yeah, kind of. At the same time, there was some really dramatic personal life shit going on, too. So there was, like, I was being pulled in a lot of crazy directions.
Like, picking up and going to Europe was kind of like, cool, see you guys.
it was see you guys and hello, you guys. It was a very dramatic, like, movie drama. Like, it was insane. There was, like, love triangle.
Yeah, love trapezoids.
There was a love trapezoid.
Parallelogram.
Yeah. There was a non-geometrical form love trapezoid. Like that. There was craziness, and it got me to Berlin, where the craziness continued. But in the time that, the year I moved to Berlin, the rules changed there. You used to be able to be there 3 months, go to Poland for a day, and then your 3 months could be renewed. And suddenly there was
the Schengen zone.
They changed, yeah. So now there was this
highway
Schengen zone.
To the Schengen zone.
Sorry. It happens.
I wish the listeners could see the look on my face right now.
Which is really just like, come on.
Like, no, I was like, why don't I know that song?
Danger Zone?
Well,
Kenny Loggins?
Yeah, I know the song. Okay, but good. I for a second thought the Schengen Zone was a real song. I was confused.
Yeah, it was in Top Gun. Sorry. Moving on. So you're funny. In Berlin.
As in Berlin.
The rules have
the
changed
rules have
on
changed.
You.
For me to be there as long as I intended to be there, I needed to apply for a visa. I applied for a visa. The drama in my life that got me to Berlin also got me to give up the apartment I had in Montreal. I stayed in Berlin for the length of my visa. I had to go back to Canada. Life was still really upheavally. And I wasn't sure what city to live in. And I had a tour booked. And I thought, I'm really stressed out right now. I'm going to take these 3 months where I have shows booked all over Canada, and then I'll look for an apartment and figure it out. And as I was on that tour, I was like, or maybe,
like, what if,
since I have to look for places to stay on the road, and I want to keep touring, if I look for an apartment, I'm just going to be constantly looking for people to sublet it while I'm still touring. Why would I do that to myself? Why don't I just keep touring? Never in a million years did I think that this would last as long as it did. I thought a few more months, then a few more months. And it has now been 7 years.
Wow. Seven years, no fixed address.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's pretty bananas.
It's pretty bananas. Yeah.
So I think we're going to take a quick break and re-up on our kombucha.
Just because we want to be even more insufferable.
That's the funniest segue to an interview break I've ever had. Wow.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit just about taking care of ourselves on the road and in creative prospects, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Make sure there's kombucha at every interview.
Yeah, well, we take care of our guests.
Yes,
we know how
we
to treat a fine touring lady just right. And then maybe if we've got some time, we might play a little bit of music and sing some songs. So
that'd be fun.
Maybe not even on this episode, but we might release it as like a bonus.
A boner
or something
episode?
Like that.
Bonus
but
episode.
Anyway,
I'm all over
we'll
it.
Be right back.
Self-care tip. Get your wife to get you Wendy's when you're hangover as fuck.
Well, when you're hungover, you need grease.
You gotta have the grease. Got grease it. Is the word that you heard.
Oh,
we're back.
We're back. Oh, man. So we were just kind of talking about how Katie and I are homebodies to the extreme. Really enjoy a routine.
To the max with, like, three X's almost?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, serious
like,
business.
I have a bit of, like, sort of a contradictory feeling with routine sometimes where it's like when I get into a routine, I start feeling really good and healthy, then I start getting really bored and I do something self-destructive.
Yes.
Like
that's
stay
a pretty
out.
Normal
yeah,
pattern.
Like stay out too late and like on a weeknight and all that kind
up
of stuff,
little.
Right?
And it all just fucking falls apart.
My wild and crazy life stuff. Sometimes I stay out late on a weeknight.
Oh my god.
But Katie, I think you're even more routine-y
so
than
really
I am.
Routine-y. Yeah.
And so this like living on the road sleeping in different places, like not having your own bed to go back to, like sharing space with a whole bunch of new people all the time. I feel like that would drive me.
I have two bathrooms in my house. There are two people who live there. Like, that's how much I don't like sharing bathrooms with people. Okay. So I would not survive.
The road is not for you.
No.
Yeah. And
it's not for me. It's not for my butt.
Yeah. It's not really for mine either. But we won't.
You do the best you can.
I do the best I can. I don't think I would recommend this to anybody. Like, I really don't. It's bizarre that I am well suited to this life.
It's just a strange.
It's hard. But it's, like, so amazing, too. And I remember I take it for granted now, and I really love being asked about this, and I really need to write this book already because I've started to get so used to it, I take it for granted, which is horrible, and that means you need to stop and write about it.
I like that.
Yeah. I noticed all these things in the first year that I was doing it. First, I thought I was going completely insane.
Just from the total lack of routine, or?
There's symptoms that come along with that, and there's quite an array of them. And then in the first like few months of having those symptoms, I actually was concerned for my mental health. I thought I was losing my mind because there were lots of really weird phenomena that came along with like shifting spaces so frequently. I thought I was seeing people that weren't there. Like there's doppelgangers everywhere, and there's just really
your brain like just sees familiar things and then fills in the rest for people
and
you already
like,
know.
Yeah, and you have really messed up dreams where you're like mushing up all the different places and people. There are an insane amount of uncanny coincidences that happen that like I now give like titles to the themes of like different chapters of my tour. So there was like the Frank Zappa tour one time, because Frank Zappa came up in every conversation every night, not by me. Like there's just themes emerged. I had a tour where the double theme of a tour was people who've lost a child.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, God.
And I met an anomaly. Every day I met someone who confided me in me that, and it was just crazy. And chickens.
Same tour.
And then I met someone who confided in me that they'd lost a child, said, I don't know why I'm telling you this. And I put a hand on them and I was like, it's okay. I know why you're telling me this. It's my theme, this tour. And
that's so wild.
Yeah. And then I told her, my tour, I told her what I mean by that. And I was like, it's chickens and lost children. And she looked at me like I was crazy, and I'm like, oh my God, I totally said something horribly insensitive, like comparing chickens to lost children. And she goes, no, I've never told anybody this, but the child I lost, when we brought the sibling to the graveyard to say goodbye to her, the sibling refused to go unless she put on her chicken suit from the play she was in. And
oh,
I was like, oh my God. It was,
I'm goosebumping. All over the place.
I have so many stories like that. It's insane.
That's like serious kismet stuff.
Yeah. So when that first starts happening to you, that's a symptom of psychosis when you start to see patterns.
You're losing your goddamn mind.
But like our brains are meant to do that, like to take a bunch of data and see patterns in it, even if it's not rational. Like, that is a reflex, I think.
I guess, I mean, that's an anomalous.
That's very bizarre.
Right? And that's one of several stories I've had. So that's mental health. You really have to be, like, grounded because there's stuff like that flying at you from every which way. But there were all sorts of things that I noticed that I'm like, of course I love this. Like, I always loved field trips when I was in school. I always loved being like on the actual road as a passenger, staring out a window at moving scenery. I've always loved seeing the houses of different friends and see what's in their bathroom and what's
in
their
other half live.
Except for it's not the other half anymore. Yeah. It's like literally how do people live?
Yeah.
And it's like so fascinating and so energizing and exhausting.
I bet.
But the energizing part is just thrilling and enthralling. So but you have to be super adaptable and be okay hanging out with strangers and sleeping on weird surfaces and being way too cold one night and way too hot one night and like having your period when you're staying with men and then realizing, oh shit, in these stupid European bathrooms, the sink is not in the same room as the toilet. Fuck, how do I get out of here without them seeing me? Like, when there's just all sorts of craziness.
Yeah. Wild.
Hence, the book needs to be written.
You gotta write that book.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Yeah. So, you probably have to grapple a lot with feeling kind of rootless from time to time. Like, does that... what's the longest you've spent anywhere in the last 7 years?
Couple months.
Wow.
Yeah, and I seriously get itchy about to leave. Like,
itchy
I
feet.
Don't.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
The road is your home.
The road is
the road.
Absolutely. Like, it's, I can't even fathom stopping, which is also very scary sometimes because it's like, oh my God, my body's going to die. Yeah. I need to stop. And then, like, well, where do I go? What city do I go? I had a health scare and thought, oh, if I find out I'm dying, where do I go? That was the weirdest thought. It was a few years ago, and I was like, holy shit, man. I'm going to have to burden somebody with dying. Like,
oh,
that's
God.
Crazy. Where will I go? What? I don't want to die in the city I have healthcare in. That sucks. I'd want to be in, like, which friends would I want around me? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, it was...
Such a question to have to ask yourself.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a normal life. And then that can sometimes be a little bit isolating because, like, you don't know anybody else who lives like that. So, like, nobody gets all of this.
But I remember you talking about you really formed, like, very deep and almost instantaneous connections with people when you're in a new city. And, like, our friendship is maintained. Like, we don't really talk a lot when you're on the road and traveling elsewhere. Like, maybe a few Facebook messages were on each other's radar. But normally we only talk when you're, like, planning to come to the city and we're figuring out, like, what schemes or adventures
we can
do. And while you're here, we always talk really in depth. And if you're staying with me or if you're staying with other people, like, you know, you have those really deep and intense things that do last...
Yes.
The span of the year, and then you come back, and it's like we pick up where we left off, which is really amazing.
It is.
And you've got that network all over the world.
Yeah. Well, not all over the world, but in several towns in several countries.
Yeah.
And they're deep, wonderful friendships that continue. Having friendships that you revisit cyclically is very interesting, too, because you will not see people for a year. And then it feels like no time has passed, but then your whole life has passed in that year, and theirs too, and there's changes, and there's things that have stayed the same, and it's a different brain. I think if someone did a brain scan of my brain at this point of touring, I think it would look really different than other people's brains.
I would love to do that. I'm a big fan. I got an MRI for science just because I was interested.
I'm a big fan of MRIs.
I enrolled in a research study. Yeah. I was just the control group, and they were looking at, like, some schizophrenia research. And so I went into the MRI, and I'm like, what I want out of this is I want the pictures of my brain.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, well, we don't usually give those. I was like, how much do I have to pay you for the pictures of my brain? And I gave them $50, and they gave me a thumb drive. They're like, we can't give you a snapshot because the MRI does, like, a whole thing. So it's actually, I have a video.
Oh.
And it loops.
Is it your whole body?
It's my whole brain. And it just, like, parts come and they develop and they turn away and then they go. It's, like, trippy as fuck to look at.
You looked inside your own
head. I'm a hypochondriac, so it would be really
What's that bump? What's that
consuming?
Thing?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of weird because you're just like, what? I'm missing parts of my brain. But it's like, no, they're just not showing up in that image. So it's, like, this big flow.
Cool.
They can't put together the whole thing. But apparently musicians' brains, the corpus callosum, that connects the two
hemispheres
is thicker because we do a lot more connective work between our right brain, left brain, creativity and communication and all the motor skills and all the math and all the language functions. Like, so apparently, so I was just like, I asked them, I'm like, do I have a thicker corpus callosum? They're like, we don't really know.
I'm like, sure.
Why did I sign up for this study?
I want to be proven genius.
I had to take out all of my body jewelry to go into the MRI.
Oh, man. It's so funny, like, how certain things will just trigger memories in your brain, because you're like, a corpus callosum. I'm like, Phineas T. Gage. He got a railroad spike through his corpus callosum and survived. Oh, it's, like, one of the most popular, first-year psychology.
Steph, I would never know.
Was a first-year psychology thing, right? Like, if you ever had to take Psych 101 somewhere, it's like, they bring him up, because they talk about, like, how your brain can still work after it's been injured and how you change.
Yeah, and it heals in weird new
pathways.
He
became,
pathways.
Like, a real dick, basically,
that
after his,
also
like,
happens.
Survived it, but he turned into a huge dick, so
I have not
won.
Yet turned into a huge dick.
No,
but
I doubt you would. You didn't get a railroad spike through your brain so far, so that's a good
but
that's
I'm
a good
pretty
life.
Sure.
You are on the train a lot, so be careful.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I don't think...
Don't tell that to a paranoid person.
Not paranoid, hypochondriac.
Okay,
it has to be symptoms first.
It's not a disease. It's like an accident.
It's fine.
So it's fine.
What am I going to do? I can't avoid accidents, but I can, you know, try to.
I can worry myself.
I can worry, yes.
Into
worry
a coma.
Sick into diseases. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Totally.
Yes.
Well, I'm always trying
actually,
to do that
I
too,
was just writing. I do write towards this book in little snippets, and I was just writing a piece about another health scare and how I compared my reaction to it to the reaction I had to a health scare a few years back, and it was so radically different.
Mm.
A few years back, I had a health scare, and I was like, I can't die now. I cannot die now. I've just started living on the road. This cannot be my story. I cannot die now. And this time I was like, it's okay if I die now.
Ooh.
Which I don't want to, but it was like, I'm proud of who I've become.
Aww.
And I think people know who I am as who I know I am, and there's a body of work out there that I've put out. So, holy shit. I think I've reached some...
level
I was talking
peace.
To a friend about happiness, and I was like, I don't really use the word happiness, but I use the word satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really profound reaction to fear that was very new and noticeable to me. Mm. That I was like, and not, don't get me wrong, like, I really have a lot more work to do that I want
to
get done.
I'll have
done.
To go kicking and screaming. But
yeah, yeah,
like,
for sure.
Okay, fine, but I'll hate it the whole time.
But what a difference. But I was, in writing about that, I realized that I've always had weird health things, even when I was younger, but the fear and anxiety about health did not start until I started living on the road.
Mm.
So one definite negative side effect of being on the road is like hypochondria that I never had before.
Mm.
I might have developed it anyway, but this, I'm going to be a burden on somebody. Mm. I'm in a foreign country. If I have a heart attack, what's going to happen? Like, it's a completely different thing than I'm at home.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
And then what about taking care of yourself when you're not well on the road? Or because it's different, you know, you're at home, you have friends around you or parents or mm-hmm. partners or whoever that can, like, bring you soup or change yeah. you out of your jammies.
If you're really hungover, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Or, like, I don't know, make you soup or whatever.
Yeah.
You have your close
Do you really
friends
want some
can...
soup right now? Is that...
Did I mention soup a couple times?
A couple.
Oh. Well,
yeah, I just want some soup.
Soup
gonna
is
make...
like the perfect metaphor for
I'm going
to
make some
comfort.
Delicious burrito kind of like tortilla soup after
Ooh,
this.
Whoa.
So
Ooh,
that's
sounds...
maybe it's on my mind.
Yeah, it sounds good. In the soup zone?
Roasted yam black bean soup.
In the
well,
soup.
Fuck yeah, girl.
Awesome. Yeah.
Okay.
That does sound good.
No, yeah, no one's ever made me that on the road yet.
Mm. Soup?
Yeah.
What? You came to my house and make you
soup. Soup, yeah, but just not tortilla black bean yam soup. I have two responses to that. One is that in the ways that I have taken horrible care of myself, for example, a whole month where my diet was French fries, cigarettes, and coffee, pretty much exclusively.
You don't want to eat those cigarettes, though. It's kind of gross.
No, I was smoking them in between the coffee and the French fries. It was. I was going by what's cheap because
mm-hmm,
I was... trying to use, like, be, yeah, obviously, for obvious reasons. Survival food. It was warm and greasy, therefore it felt satisfying, mm-hmm. and then coffee kept me awake when I was exhausted, and then cigarettes were just an addiction I had that I finally kicked a year and a half ago.
Hey.
Because, and sleep deprivation, my friends, and then I'm seeing all these documentaries where, like, sleep deprivation will give you cancer in your 30s.
Oh,
like,
great.
You know, like, you should not do this to yourself.
I don't need to know.
Yeah, no, yeah. And I've been severely sleep deprived for years and long before I was touring because I just don't get enough sleep. The culmination of that has caused so many physical problems and mental problems in me that I've had to pay attention. Like,
yeah.
My body didn't give me the... I ignored it for a really long time. I pushed every limit past every limit times 1,000. Ended up with serious pain, chronic pain issues, chronic injuries. Everything they tell you will happen when you take shitty care of yourself actually does happen.
Right.
Which was really disappointing.
Yeah. I like, thought I was the special one.
I really did think I was invincible for many years.
Well, you
years.
Could outrun it just by continuing.
Yeah. And it was really funny, in a way, tragic funny, because so many of my, I was about to say comrades, seriously, should not stop reading revolutionary novels. So many of my comrades, so many of my colleagues have serious addictions. Like,
sure.
They're serious boozers and serious drug takers, and I'm, like, not that, but I was still killing myself faster than they were somehow because of the way I was living.
Mm.
I ended up with, like, severe allergies.
Right.
That forced me to not buy sandwiches at train stations. They forced me into taking better care of myself. I started, like, so by really weird, circuitous ways, mm-hmm. I've forced myself, my body's forced me to stretch every day, to, you know, make rice cake and natural peanut butter sandwiches to take with me on the road to make sure, you know, whatever, because I was physically falling apart.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, well, I'd love to keep eating the same road food that I did, but my body literally shut down, gave me hives, and made it so I couldn't breathe, so I need to do something about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, my body or said
like
no.
My guts,
just like Gabor Mate
like,
says it will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have that book.
Yeah, it's great. My
As
body
do I.
My body screamed no really loudly yeah. for a really long time, and then
you're
I
like, oh, what's that? What's yeah. that? Oh, I get it. Oh, fine. Okay, sure.
The incredible flip side of that is that I believe in this kind of amazing fortune that I've had. The people that I've met on the road have intuitively, I've met some healers. Mm-hmm. I've met people who, oh, you're on the road. I'm a massage therapist. I'll give you a massage. Oh, you're on the road. I do Reiki. Let me give you Reiki. Oh, I have
everybody
free...
Everyone trying to Reiki everybody
I have everybody's Reiki and every... Oh, I have free passes to a sensory deprivation tank happening this week, by the way.
Nice.
So there's a balance.
Mm-hmm. Gifts from the universe.
Yeah. People like your friend Chris who like, come sleep on my couch yes. and you can just curl up in a sweaty fever ball and yeah. I'll feed you soup and we'll just all ignore you and let you sleep for
yeah.
like 2 days straight.
Yeah.
For
it
the
will
last
make
time
you
she was
tea.
There.
That
a couple
the
times.
Yeah. 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 Anyway. And you gave me a blanket. You gave me your blanket to take with me on the Greyhound.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is in Calgary now.
Yeah.
Well, next time you're back in town, I got an actual spare room if you want a real
Sweet.
Bed that
the
you can sleep in.
The more people I know with spare rooms, the less I have to burden the same person every time I'm
totally.
In town. So that's great.
And I'm right by the SkyTrain, so.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
But the generosity.
Just special gifts for our guests.
The generosity of people, mm-hmm. ultimate highlight of this life.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. It's. You know, we think about being so radically independent. Like, I really am like that, very
yeah.
self-reliant. You were just saying at the beginning of this episode, Katie, about, like, not wanting to receive help from people and finding it really difficult.
I do want it, but I hate
asking
needing
for it.
And I hate, like what you said, I don't want to be a burden.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be that person that I don't... And I don't even talk that way about people that I do occasionally feel like I am burdened with them. Like, there are people I know that need a lot of extra love
yeah.
and they need a lot of extra attention.
But it doesn't
I'm mostly happy to give it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And when I was on the giving end, I was so always
Yeah,
always
so then
happy
why don't we think
it.
That other people are just
yeah.
as generous as we can
you know,
be to our
people
friends.
People fuck up
yeah.
your self-worth at certain parts in your life and it makes
yeah.
you think that you're not worthy of
yeah.
care from other people or well, that like you are
yeah.
somehow going to be a unique burden.
Yeah.
And no, like I'm never down for more than a few days. I could just let somebody look after me every
yeah.
now and again and it's okay.
When I came back from Europe and didn't have enough gigs to even buy groceries and didn't have a place and was having really like serious life stuff happening, I stayed with friends for 2 whole months.
Wow.
I had other friends in town. And I kept telling them that I can go elsewhere. And they're like, no, your stuff's here. You're fine. You're fine. When I went out west after 2 months, someone was giving me a ride. And I reached my arms out to embrace the wife of the couple to say thank you. And before the words came out of my mouth, as she hugged me, she said, thanks for everything, Orit.
Wow.
And that was a massive shift for me. I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, whoa, we love having you here. You're so helpful. You helped walk the dog. You
Aww.
Know, you help, you know, we love your stories. Like,
yeah,
I'm
you're
like,
a pleasure to be around. Oh, we get into like these like 4 hour long conversations sometimes.
Which
like.
I feel very self-conscious about too. I'm like, mm. I talk too much. And they're like, no, not a lot of people have the same kinds of stories you do.
Well, there's certain kinds of talking that gives people energy rather than takes it from them,
yeah.
I think. And if you must have figured that out at some point, because I'm feeling pretty jazzed up. Might be a bit of the kombucha, but but I think it's also the companionship.
Riding
so.
That scoby high.
Oh, yeah. My tasty bacteria drink.
Mm.
Good for the guts.
It
yeah.
is.
Namaste, my friend.
Indeed. Okay, well, I love that as sort of a maybe a place to put a pin in it. Then
yeah.
maybe we'll play some songs. Just like,
sure.
I kind of wouldn't mind just getting a couple
a
of those
music
on tape.
There.
Yeah.
But, I love that. It's just like there is a lot of generosity in people and there is a lot of goodness and like sharing and taking care of each other in a really
mm-hmm.
collaborative way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I bristle a lot over self-care even though I am like a very independent person as well. So it's like how are these communities of care that we can look after each other and you've spread yours in like a really awesome
yeah.
international way and I
yeah.
just think that's...
It's incredible.
Pretty awesome.
It's incredible.
So to let ourselves be open to receiving that kind of love and generosity.
Let us let ourselves be loved.
Oh. What one of the Reiki sessions that I was given, I hear messages when I, like, I didn't even believe in Reiki until I had it. I was like, well, whatever, I'm just going to lie and relax.
I just don't believe in bus stop Reiki. That's okay. What I know. Yeah, the UBC Reiki Club can bite me, but okay. Whatever works, right?
The hell works for you. I was just ready to, like, lie down and relax in a lavender-scented room, and she could do whatever she wanted. I was like, okay,
great
cool.
Way to spend your time, honestly.
Yeah. And then when she did it, I heard messages, and it was like a really profound experience. I will tell you the whole story in the book. But after that first time where I received a lot of messages, every time I visit her, she does it again, and I get one core message. And the last time I had it, the words were, receive love. It's okay.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really
fucking
great.
A.
Yeah. That's a great thing to end on. I
like that.
That's beautiful.
I love you guys.
Thank you so much, Arita. And you're coming back in the summer, you said, so we'll catch up and see what you've been up to.
Cast the pod again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool. Thank you
Thanks.
For having me.
All right, folks, this is a shorter episode, but we're going to release some music for you guys later on this week. And until next week, receive love.
And receive love.
Receive love and keep it haggy. That's not a thing
I guess
we say.
We're going to try on some catchers.
That one's not going to be here next week.
Okay, bye.